Hello there. Welcome back to our discussion and look into Mark's Gospel. The Master Servant teaching the service to serve. In chapter 5, we saw him demonstrating him dealing with the good seed. Now in the 6th chapter, we find him opening up with dealing with the wayside soil. And then we will move on to the rocky soil, and then onto the thorny soil. Now, it won't be a surprise to you to discover that the wayside soil, that hard-packed soil that is just not capable of becoming fruitful, they can't take it in mentally, happens to be the people in his own home territory. And he went out from there and came unto his own country. And we all have our own country. Our own street, our own kitchen. And that's always the place where it appears to be the most difficult. Don't be surprised if it was that difficult for the master servant. Why are we complaining? And he came to his own country and his disciples followed him. And when the Sabbath day was come, he began to teach. Now notice the constancy throughout these chapters we've looked at it. He has been teaching, he has been teaching doctrine, and all the way through, preach, teach, taught, and with authority, and in his own area, and among his own relatives, exactly the same, no milking down the word. He began to teach in the synagogue, and many hearing him were astonished, saying, "From whence hath this man these things?" The local people just can't see beyond the local boy. It just can't go into the mind that this one that grew up amongst them could be God incarnate. And what wisdom is this which is given unto him that even such mighty works are wrought by his hands? They could see what he was doing. They could hear of the miracles, they could hear his word, but it still didn't help. Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joses and Judah and Simon, and are not his sisters here with us? And they were offended at him. So hey, cheer up when your relatives and locals are offended at you. But Jesus said unto them, "A prophet is not without honour but in his own country, and among his own relatives, and in his own house. And he could there do no mighty work, except that he laid his hands on a few sick folk and healed them. And he was staggered at their unbelief." Not non-belief. Non-belief, you don't believe anything. Unbelief, you do know, but you refuse to believe. That's how hard the human heart can be. And he went round about the villages, and here's the word, teaching. He just moved on. He didn't stay there and nag, justifying himself in front of the locals. He told them, he left them, he went on to spread it elsewhere. All too often, it's the hardest thing to do is to leave our relatives alone and let God be the one to break into that heart. And he called unto them 12 and began to send them forth by two and two and gave them power over unclean spirits. Remember what I said in the last chapter? You never take this power to yourself. This was a gift that he gave to them. And he commanded that they should take nothing for their journey except a stick only, no scrip, no bread, no money in their purse, but be shod with sandals and not put on two coats. And he said unto them, "In what place soever you enter into a house, there abide till ye depart from that place. And whoever shall not receive you nor hear you, when you depart, just simply shake off the dust under your feet for a testimony against them. Truly I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city." And they went out and preached that men should repent. And they cast out many demons and anointed with oil many that were sick and healed them. And that's the only text in the whole of the time of his life on earth prior to his passion where that anointing with oil is mentioned. And remember, it was not ceremonial, sacramental. The word anoint here, as in the Epistle of James, let them call for the elders of the church to anoint over them with oil in the name of the Lord. That anoint means simply applying what you can get at the chemist. So the disciples went out and took whatever remedies were available at that time, and they did the practical earthly medical thing they could for people, as well as praying. Both things are there. All too often we have an expectation of God that's not in Scripture. And as many a person has laid aside medicine because they've said, no, no, Jesus alone will do it. Well, that's contrary to his word. And we have to remember that. He even said to the people when he raised that little girl again, give us something to eat. There are things that we can do that he will not do. And so the idea of saying, well, no, no, I'm not going near doctors, I'm not going near medicine, Jesus will take care of this, you're wrong. And they were also limited, these servants, because they couldn't preach forgiveness and a new life because Christ hadn't died yet to even give them a new life. It is all temporary. And so we leave that area of hard-packed soil. And now we move on to an example of the rocky soil. Now remember, that soil is receiving the word gladly. It's emotional, but it never comes to anything. Now our example here is in King Herod. And King Herod heard of Jesus, for his name was spread abroad. And he said that this is John the Baptist that was risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works to show forth themselves in him. So what do you learn about what Herod has already heard? Nothing wrong with his hearing. He has heard the preaching of John the Baptist. And Herod believes in the resurrection of the dead. And others said to him, no, no, it's Elijah. And others said it's a prophet, or it's one of the prophets. But when Herod heard it, he said, it is John whom I beheaded. He's arisen from the dead. For Herod himself had sent forth and laid hold on John and bound him in prison for Herodias' sake, his brother Philip's wife, for he had married her. For John had said unto Herod, it's not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. Therefore Herodias had a quarrel against him and would have killed him, but she couldn't. For Herod feared John, knowing that he was a just man and a holy man, and observed him. And when he heard him, he did many things and heard him gladly. Now you're learning a lot about this Herod here. He's a man that believes in resurrection. He's a man that believes that there is such a thing as justice and being just. He's a man that believes in holiness and knows that the life that John the Baptist led was a much more holy life than he ever led in his palace with all his materialistic wealth. And notice this, he was watching him. Yes, you'd be amazed at who watches you. And he enjoyed hearing him gladly. There's that emotion. Enjoyed it. But you'll notice what upset his enjoyment of the preaching of the preacher, John the Baptist. John got personal in his message. Keep that in mind when you're bearing witness. If you want everybody to think you're a wonderful person, I've heard people say of a preacher, oh, he's such a lovely man. What's that got to do with being Christian and teaching the Word of God and being true to the Word? John was appreciated by Herod until John got personal and said to him in public, "You're committing adultery." Nowadays we cover the idea of saying that to people under the guise of, well, we Christians must be loving and must be kind. If you remember, when John first preached, his first statement to the religious people of his day was, "You're a big bunch of snakes." Try that as an opener when you get your first opportunity to witness and see the reaction. That's all it took. That was the time of testing. And John really told Herod, and Herod withered away. And when a convenient day was come, that Herod on his birthday made a supper to his lords, his captains, and his chief estates of Galilee. And when the daughter of the said Herodias came in and danced and pleased Herod and them that sat with him, and the king said unto the damsel, "Ask me whatsoever you will, and I will give it you." And he swore unto her, "Whatever you shall ask me, I will give it to you to half the kingdom." There's a good sense of irresponsibility if ever there was one. That's what happens when you have a cavorting party. You can be so out of your mind with drink that you would turn round and make a statement like that. And she went forth and said to her mother, I love this text, not because of the outcome, because I today hear mothers and fathers saying to me, "Billy, have you seen these young things? You'd wonder where they learn all this new fandangled stuff they're going for." They get quite upset when I say, "Shh, you get what you produce. If you train your children to be godless, never be surprised if they are." And even in the Bible, you find that Jacob was taught to steal by his mother. And here's another prime example, where it's the mother that's teaching the little daughter what to ask for. She said, "What shall I ask?" And she said, "The head of John the Baptist." And she came in immediately with a hurry to the king and asked, saying, "I will that you give me by and by in a charge of the head of John the Baptist." And notice the emotions now. Here's the man that heard the word gladly. And he was exceeding sorry, not just sorry, exceeding sorry. But what's he going to do? Yet for his oath's sake, and for their sakes which sat with him, he couldn't reject her. His entire life was governed on the basis of what would other people think. Do you know anyone that lives like that? I'm constantly being torn, but Brother Billy, if I went out, went home, went to the church, among my peer group, and started living honestly as God wanted me to live, what would other people think? You know, you have to learn to stop living on the basis of what other people think. It's what God thinks that matters. And immediately the king sent an executioner and commanded his head to be brought, and went and beheaded him in the prison. And he brought his head in a charger and gave it to the girl, and the girl gave it to her mother. And that was the last time God ever spoke to Herod. Even later, when he had a chance to meet Jesus prior to crucifixion, he was glad to see him of a long time, and expected to see some miracle done by Jesus, and questioned him in many words, and Jesus answered him nothing. He had his chance, and it withered at a time of testing. So you can hear it, know it, but if it's based on an emotional response, but not a full heart response, you don't get there. And the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told them all the things both what they had done and what they had taught after they had buried the body of John. But notice, the servants who were sent out are excitedly telling him all that they had done and what they had taught. So slow to remember it was what he enabled them to do. Never take the credit to yourself. I like his reaction. And he said unto them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. Now notice this, it's important. Jesus was the first to institute for his servants a holiday, a time of leisure, a time of rest, a breakaway. And it's a false concept that says, oh, I'm so busy serving Christ, I can't afford to take a break. Jesus slept in a pillow. Jesus sat in a weary. Jesus took the disciples apart to rest a while. And I will tell you this, drive a tired spirit, mind, will, emotions, and body, and you're going to be a health disaster. You owe it to yourself as a true servant of Christ to give yourself times of restitution, reparation, recreation to your mind, will, emotions, and body, and spirit. Then you're fresh for a new start in a new day. Don't be so super spiritual you think you can bypass times of recreation and restitution and restoration. Rest those tired nerves. Rest the tired body. Learn to take a break. You will see the difference. After all, if you die today, you'll be surprised in heaven to discover the church will go on without you. Evangelism will continue without you. They will still get a speaker for the next meeting. It wouldn't matter whether you were there or not. Committees will always find another speaker. Yes, you'll be amazed at the people who wonder, what would happen to the church if I was not there? It'll go on. You may be the very instrument he still needs for quite some time, so take care of it. I wouldn't like a surgeon to operate on me with a blunt knife. Why should Christ do his work in this world with blunt Christians? Learn to sharpen up. Keep the instrument healthy, fit for the master's use. And the people saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran afoot thither out of all the cities, and out went them, and came together unto him. And Jesus, when he came out, saw much people, and was moved with compassion toward them, because they were a sheep not having a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. There's that word again, teaching. And when the day was now far spent, his disciples came to him and said, this is a desert place, and it's getting late. Send them away, that they may go into the country round about and into the villages and buy themselves bread, for they've nothing to eat. And here we're seeing him now being confronted by the thorny soil. And surprise, surprise, the thorny soil were his own disciples. All they could see was the problem, the insurmountable difficulty. Get rid of them. Send them away. The problem's too big for us to deal with. Just get rid of them. The church has been sending people away ever since, because it just will not go to Christ to deal with a problem. They just get rid of the problem. Send them away, that they may go into the country round about and into the villages and buy bread, for they've nothing to eat. And Jesus answered and said unto them, you give them to eat. And they said unto him, shall we go and buy 200 penny worth of bread and give them to eat? That's all we've got. And he said unto them, how many loaves have you? You know something? They hadn't even bothered to be practical enough to find out. See a problem, deal with it, get rid of the people, let's get out of here. They never even looked to see what they could do. And this is the group that have watched him doing miracles. And they don't think in terms of turning to him. He said, go and see. I'm not doing a miracle till you've done what you can do. Go and see. And when they knew, they said, 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And he commanded them to make everybody sit down by companies upon the green grass. And they sat down in the ranks by hundreds and fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, he looked up to heaven and panicked. Is that what it says? Did he have an all-night prayer meeting saying, oh God, we know you can do this. Oh God, please do it. No, he didn't. He never panicked. He just simply looked up and said, thank you. He ever tried living the thank you way? Even at the tomb of Lazarus, he says, Father, I thank you. You always hear me. Thanks. This is your opportunity. In the face of all these difficulties, I am exercising my will to commit the problem to a higher source to deal with. Yes, that's what's necessary. Get yourself out of the way and put God in charge. And he just simply said, thank you. And he broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before them, and the 2 fishes divided he among them all. And they did all eat and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets of the fragments and of the fishes, and they that did eat of the loaves were about 5,000 people. Now you'll notice that Christ worked the miracle, but he never moved. He sent them out to dish out the food. That's so typical of this master servant. In the background serving, doing the miracle, but giving the credit to his servants. Letting them go out and dish out. It was the same at the wedding in Cana of Galilee. He said, you fill the jugs with water. You serve it to the people. And the water became wine. But the people that appreciated this better wine looked up to see who dished it out. And it was the servants. Jesus never moved. Yes, we always seem to think he'll do it. And we won't move. No, no. He'll do it, but you'll do the doing. He won't do the moving. You'll do what you can do. Go and dish it out. Share it. Give it. And he'll work the miracle. And immediately he constrained his disciples to get into the ship and to go to the other side before unto Bethsaida while he sent away the people. And when he had sent them away, he departed into a mountain to pray. That was his source. Once he'd seen them off, he got alone with his Father. All was going back to where he would replenish himself with what's needed for a new day. Do you ever do that? And when the evening was come, the ship was in the middle of the sea and he alone in the land. And he saw them toiling and rowing. Yes. All caught up in the cares and troubles and things of this life. Money matters, problems, bread. Now they're toiling. Life is tough. They're toiling and rowing, for the wind was against them. Yes, everything always seems to be against us. And about the 4th watch of the night, 10 in the evening, he came unto them walking on the sea, and he would have passed by them. He's such a gentleman. He doesn't force his miraculous power on anybody. You want him, you may have him. You call on him, he's there. Don't have him pass you by. Let him know you need him. What's the heart cry of many a person in the counselling room? Why bother going to church? I could be just as well a coat hanger when I get there. Nobody needs me there. I'm not wanted there. I like to know I'm wanted. I like to know I'm needed. So does Christ. But when they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed it had been a ghost and cried out. You'd be amazed at the things people do on a supposition. When Paul was in Philippi and the earthquake took place, The centurion nearly killed himself, committed suicide on a supposition because he supposed the prisoners had fled. The ship that Paul was in going to Rome, the captain supposed because the south wind blew softly all would be well, and Paul warned him there was a storm coming, and he sailed right into the heart of a cyclone, and they lost the ship, just got away with the skin of their teeth and their life onto the island of Malta. And even in the garden, Mary nearly missed the risen Christ because she supposed he was a gardener. Never live on supposition. Find out the facts. Live in the reality of life. And here it is again. They were missing the miraculous God incarnate on the water because they supposed it was a ghost. For they all saw him and were troubled, and immediately he talked with them and said unto them, Be of good cheer, it's I, be not afraid. And they went up unto them into the ship, and the wind ceased, and they were sore amazed in themselves beyond measure and wondered. For they considered not the miracle of the loaves, for their heart was hardened. Yes, that's the problem with these people. Their heart is hard. Serving with a hard heart is still being done today. And when they had passed over, they came into the land of Gennesaret and drew to the shore. And when they were come out of the ship, immediately everybody knew him. And they ran through that whole region round about and began to carry about in beds those that were sick when they heard where he was. And wherever he entered into villages or cities or country, they laid the sick in the streets and besought him that they might touch if it were but the border of his garment. Where do you think they learnt that from? There's your good seed from chapter 5, the woman with the hemorrhage, letting everybody know, I just touched him. And now everybody wants to touch him. And as many as touched him were made whole. Yes, that's fulfilling her responsibility. And there in the Gadarenes, they're flocking to him. Why? Because a demon-possessed man, now returned to total sanity, clothed and in his right mind, has obeyed Christ, not to cling close to him and stick so close to him and become one of these isolationist people, but he's out there in his community and society, and he's telling people of the good things that God has done for him. Yes, many, many people have to serve. It's not in a pulpit, a platform, a meeting, a Sunday school. It's just down the street. Wherever they are, wherever they're going. Have you ever really done that? Oh, what lessons there is today as we listen to this. Especially not running away from problems or just getting rid of them, but turning to Christ. Learning to return to your Father for the strength through prayer you need for every new day. Hand every difficulty over to him. Don't live in supposition. And consider the things that he's done. Meditate on them. They didn't. That's why they became hard-hearted. Learn to be a good server. And go about sharing what you know and see the wonderful things that he will do. Don't let your heart become hard.